listening and welcome to a community affairs program of KIDE Hoopa, Hoopa Tribal Radio from the Greater Hoopa Valley. This topic that we are presenting today was a request from the tribal chairman to give you a presentation about the All Tree Company that is proposing to put a plant in the modular facilities in Campbell Field. And so we have a full house here. We've got tribal chairman Ryan Jackson. Also, we have Walter Gray.
Good evening, Joe.
Good evening. And Tony Berger, who is the CEO. And Michael Derry.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, Joe. Thank you for having us.
Hey, Joe.
Okay. So we have an agenda that has been prepared for us to follow, and we'll be taking in questions. I believe Facebook is the way to get your other questions into here, and then we have an engineer in our studio who is going to be monitoring that, Chance Carpenter. He's at the controls right now. So if he finds another question, he'll actually verbalize the question for us over his mic when the time comes. So you may hear his voice from time to time. So the topic is Project All Tree. Who would like to start this discussion?
Well, first, I just would like to say thanks for everyone being here. Certainly, Tony, Michael, and Wally, we've been working closely over the last several months in trying to get Project All Tree off the ground and running. And this is another step in that. It's been sort of I don't want to say a long time coming, but I know there have been a lot of questions. There have been, a number of concerns related to the project and what that all means for the tribe. And we're happy to, and I'm certainly happy to be here to be as transparent as possible, to be able to offer an insight into sort of the history of All Tree, certainly PJ Woodlands, and how all of this has transpired and come together so far. I would also like to mention that on Sunday, we will be having a meeting, a public meeting, for folks to be able to come in and meet everyone here, as well as I believe it's the engineer from ICMA over in Milan, Italy, will also be here to explain some of the process of the extruder and some of the things that they'll be doing. That will be 10 a.m. Sunday at the neighborhood facility. It's been rescheduled. Originally was Saturday, but we're going to have that on Sunday. Hope everybody can be a part of that. I guess for me, I would turn it over to Tony as well as Wally to offer some insight into themselves and also PJ Woodlands, All Tree, Wachovia, and why we're here today.
Thanks. Well, thank you, Chairman. This is Tony Berger, and your first question might be, well, what's the difference between PJ Woodlands and All Tree? And to bring that distinction to the forefront, PJ Woodlands is a Delaware company that is located in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I currently reside. And the name of the product that we intend to produce is named All Tree, and that's spelled A-L-T-R-E-E. And so what is All Tree? And why is it named All Tree? All Tree is a wood fiber plastic composite. And it's called All Tree because this project is a result of the U.S. Forest Service seeking a solution to utilize the biomass waste that comes out of the national forests. And back in 1995, the U.S. Forest Service in New Mexico, District 3, approached the inventor of All Tree and said to him, we are looking for a way to take the understory and the small diameter timbers out of the forest, and instead of lopping, piling, and burning them, we want to figure out if there is a way to turn that waste material, that biomass, into a commercial product. And so the inventor, his name is Phil Archuleta. He's from Mountain Air, New Mexico. He's invented many things. He's a sign maker by trade. He makes road signs. And so Phil went to work and built a pilot plant in his factory in Mountain Air and began to work with this biomass material. So the types of waste trees that we have in New Mexico are primarily juniper trees, the one-seeded juniper and alligator juniper. And so in our landscape in New Mexico, our forests have very much become like jungles. And so Mr. Archuleta started experimenting with this biomass material and mixing it with different types of other materials like fiberglass and concrete to come up with a way to utilize large quantities of this this biomass in a commercial way. Well, once he began to mix it with HDPE number 2 plastic, which is essentially a milk jug, he found that when he heated the plastic and mixed it with the wood fiber and put it through a press, meaning it was put under pressure while it was still hot, he created a very durable sheeting product. And so after now almost 20 years of research and development and almost $5 million of investment, we have what we call Altri, which is a patent-protected product. The fourth patent for Altri was issued on Tuesday of this week, the 21st of February. I believe that was Tuesday. And so my involvement has been working with the inventor for the last 13 years to try to figure out how to help him commercialize Altri into a product that could be sold around the country and ultimately around the globe. And what we decided was that his expertise as a sign maker, and now we have this fabulous product. Altri is basically a sheet. If you can picture a 4x8 sheet of plywood that is waterproof and extremely durable, we decided that the best use, or at least the initial best use of Altri, would be to replace aluminum roadway guide signs. So every stop sign that you see, every freeway sign, every yield sign is made out of aluminum. Well, Altri is green. It's green. The manufacturing process is green. And so PJ Woodlands was created in 2015 by me, and I purchased the exclusive worldwide rights to Altri and the rights to purchase the intellectual property so that I could, after working on this project, as I mentioned, for 13 years, to go out and find a partner and produce this product in a large capacity format. And so we began last year looking for a strategic partner. And one of my business partners in PJ Woodlands is the former Secretary of the Interior, Manuel Lujan. He was also a congressman in New Mexico for 23 years. And he is a dear friend of Indian Country. It was his suggestion that we reach out to the tribal community and introduce Altri as a potential business collaboration effort. And so through that suggestion, I was introduced to another Albuquerque-based company called Tribal Business Opportunities. And Tribal Business Opportunities is a economic development company that helps tribes find and start businesses that employ tribal members and produce revenues for tribal entities. And out of that relationship, I was introduced to Walter Gray of Wachevia in Ukiah, California. And after much discussion with Walter Gray and his partners at Wachevia, they suggested, Walter being a Hoopa tribal member, that Hoopa might be a good partner for PJ Woodlands to discuss manufacturing Altri and Hoopa. And so we made a trip out here, me and my scientific team, and lo and behold, I had the opportunity to meet Chairman Jackson and several of the tribal council members, and we toured the Hoopa modular facility and found that it was really the ideal space in terms of what we were looking for, in terms of square foot, ceiling height. And from that began the discussion with Hoopa about how we might work together to bring the first full production scale manufacturing plant online. And so it is my contention that a partnership between PJ Woodlands and the Hoopa Valley Tribe could bring many benefits to Hoopa. And those benefits go beyond just employment and the opportunity to make money, but also the opportunity to create businesses to support an Altri manufacturing business. And so when we talk about jobs, we're talking about initially about 16 jobs in the first year. And as we've done projections out for 5 years, which is typical for a new business. And we believe that we can create as many as 38 to 40 jobs. And our relationship with Hoopa Valley is such that we intend to utilize a tribal hiring preference and put people to work in Hoopa. And the types of jobs that we'll be looking for start at the management level, and we need sales and marketing people. We need extruder engineers. We need operators, material handling operators, people who understand logistics and inventory. We need information technology and support, social media. We need equipment maintenance. We need accounting and bookkeeping staff, administrative staff. So that's an example of what our initial hiring requirements would look like. We're also heavily invested in the idea of job skill training and scholarship type contributions to Hoopa to help young and old find opportunities to work in this manufacturing facility. So that's sort of the job side of the opportunity for Hoopa. When we talk about other opportunities, what I call service opportunities, there are opportunities for entrepreneurs and business owners to work with us here in Hoopa, from everything from logistics and transportation. We need trucking companies to bring in raw materials and take out finished goods. We need construction contractors, electricians, plumbers, people to work in the facility for upkeep and maintenance. We need security, a security company, waste removal, landscaping, painters. It's if you picture taking an empty building or an almost empty building and getting it ready to put in a new manufacturing process, all of the things that go into that are part of the opportunity for Hoopa. And how does that sit with you, Chairman? Is that your understanding?
Yeah, I think that's great. And I guess I would like to also kind of back up and sort of highlight, you know, Hoopa Modular generally, and sort of why we are where we are today. The facility there is probably one of our most valuable assets that we have as tribals. We have natural resources and all those other things. As far as businesses are concerned, that space and that facility is still a state-of-the-art facility. It's at this point now, we've had the Hoopa Modular concept for 10-plus years, you know, building homes and providing those types of services. And the unfortunate reality is that, you know, that didn't bear the fruit that we had hoped and hasn't been as successful as what everyone would have liked to have seen. And myself, as the chairman of the tribe, you know, it's important that we look for economic opportunities whenever they come to us and are presented to us. And I've asked a number of times over the past several years to move away from the Hoopa modular because of this consistent sort of drag on the tribal budget, sort of the drag on the overall morale of, you know, the ability to have businesses here in Hoopa. When Wally came forward and said, "Hey, there's a gentleman I'd like you to meet. They want to come up and look at the facility." And we had the opportunity to sit down with you and start talking about, you know, the potential for this business and the relationship that would be created and some of the other businesses that can also be created as a result of this initial undertaking. You know, that all sounds very that sounds good to me, and it will be very beneficial for the community. So again, what we're doing here today and hopefully here in the near future is really closing and writing the final chapter of Hoopa Modular, if you will. And I know there's always been this sort of kind of emotional tie or this kind of romantic sort of idea about the modular and producing homes and doing all those things, and that's fine. But at a certain point, we have to be realistic about what is happening down there and look for other opportunities that are out there and available. And this is one of them that I think is going to be very successful. And we're not going to do what has been done in the past. You know, we're making sure that we're crossing the T's, dotting the I's, getting enough community input, getting enough research, having, you know, all of the people in place, answering the questions, ensuring that, you know, we're not putting ourselves out there in a way that's going to really put the tribe or anyone else at risk. So when you talk about, you know, moving forward and the project and the job creation and all those other things, it's something that, you know, we've all been looking forward to, and it's something that I appreciate and I'm hopeful as we move forward. So yeah, that's my take on it. I really can't wait to get started. I know we still have some work to do. This is really I shouldn't say the first step, but it's an important step in making sure that the community and the tribal membership have a clear understanding of what it is that we're doing, what it is that we're going to accomplish in the near future. And if there are any questions, you know, we've had a lot of discussion about the potential environmental impact, you know, the impact to the resource, all of the different things. And we're here today to answer those questions. And again, some of the background that you've provided, again, you know, Wally is here, Michael. Yeah, I'm looking forward to continuing the discussion here and the collaboration. I mean, with the Forest Service and the former Secretary of the Interior, and those are important relationships, and they're relationships now that can be further fostered having, you know, tribal members in really important positions within the Six Rivers Forest. You know, Merv George Jr. is now the forest supervisor. That's an important position in regards to the things that we're trying to do here. You know, Nolan Colgrove, former forest manager, he's also the district ranger for the Lower Trinity and Yukonam District in Willow Creek and Orleans. You know, there seems to be plenty of opportunity, and the things that the tribe has already is already doing as far as the way we manage the forest. You know, we can compel the Forest Service as well to begin to reduce some of the fire risk that they know that is present, and in doing that, we can create a product that, you know, is in this case bio-preferred and something that is going to be very beneficial to the environment. I mean, those are all really good things, and I'm really excited about where we're headed.
Well, if I could just back up and
sure.
address the relationship between Wakivia LLC, which is the company that I own. Mm-hmm. I have a business partner, Kevin Klein. Kate Stetson, who is the owner of Tribal Business Opportunities in Albuquerque, actually brought this to me because she knows I have relationships with several Northern California tribes. And when Tony came out to see me, Yeah, you can attest to this. I pretty much came straight at him as a Hoopa tribal member and brought up a lot of the things that I'm seeing on Facebook and, you know, the environmental impacts and those kinds of things. I fired questions at him with my business partner for about 2 days until I was satisfied that he's not trying to bring something in here that's going to be harmful to our people. There's, you know, several other tribes that are logistically similar to Hoopa, but I thought that it would be a beautiful project here because of the forest itself and trying to create a healthier forest, because I know we do a very good job managing our forest right now. I think what we're talking about here would just enhance all of that. Opportunity for our people is very important to me. I get a little emotional because I think it's important that our people be able to start thinking in a more positive way about ourselves and how we can become successful as business people, as entrepreneurs, as workers, and be able to start turning things around, you know, for our people. We used to have a lot of opportunity here in the valley. We used to have restaurants, stores, a bowling alley. My dad could sit and talk with us for hours about the things that used to be here when the mills were here and a lot of revenue was being generated here. The place was flourishing at the time, and I'd like to see us move in that direction and kind of move away from the only job you can have is either at HFI or the tribal government or the school, and start creating some exciting opportunity here on the reservation. And that's why I suggested to Tony that we come and meet with the Hoopa Valley Tribal Council and yourself. It's important to me.
Yeah, I agree, and I appreciate that, and those concerns that you've raised. You know, we've had the same discussions, and we want to ensure that, again, that what we're doing here isn't going to be harmful to the Hoopa Valley tribe and our people. We all have a responsibility, certainly I do, and as well as others, to ensure the safety of our community and to provide, you know, those opportunities and benefits to be able to, you know, flourish in life here. We have everything we need, and this is something that I know will actually have a really positive impact. And when you talk about the modular facility and the location and you know, everything that can be done there. We've talked about, you know, Campbellfield Industrial Park or a business development down there where there can be other opportunities. And that was really the idea behind originally the modular, was that there would be, you know, service station and other stores and things that were happening there. And it never did happen. But the potential for that is definitely still there. There's no reason why, again, like you talk about, the business opportunities for tribal members outside of government. You know, it's the government provides a tremendous amount of jobs, and that's fine. But we shouldn't be trying to provide every single job. We should be providing opportunities for people to be able to grow their own business, whether it starts small or, you know, have investors, whatever that is. And yeah, I agree 100%. This is something that will definitely have a really positive impact.
When we're looking at you're mentioning to build industry, why did the module plant fail? I haven't yet to see a report on that. You know, was there a forensic investigation to identify the weaknesses and how that could have been mitigated? Or?
Sure. I mean, certainly the discussion tonight isn't about the failures of the modular concept in the facility, but we can touch on that briefly. The Hoopa modular certainly came along around the time of the economy was crashing. It was the end of the Bush administration. The housing crisis was really just getting started. I think all of those things really were a part of, you know, the ultimate I just don't want to say demise, but the demise of Hoopa Modular. And it's not something that we should really honestly skirt around. That is the reality. I know there are a lot of, again, sort of emotions tied to that business and it still being there and moving forward. Oftentimes, what it comes down to is a poor management. You know, the conditions of the housing market, I think, didn't help that. I think there were some issues related to marketing. I think that our location up here and trying to actually, you know, deliver a home 500 miles away is something that wasn't entirely thought out. And I know that there was a real desire to build homes here and on the reservation and in the valley, which we've done. I don't think it's been to the level of which we had hoped, and that's just purely based on, well, I guess at a certain point, a lack of funding or a lack of investment by, you know, outside companies to come in and actually develop some of these areas. You know, the I think there were a lot of missteps internally that could have been avoided, weren't avoided, and we are where we are today. But again, this discussion about Altree, it really has nothing to do with the Hoopa Modular. The reason I brought up the Hoopa Modular was because of the beautiful facility that we do have, the tremendous investment that the tribal people did make in order to try and produce jobs, revenue, opportunities, and that is all still available to us. Now, what's here today, Altree, again, what I believe and others know to be true is that there are many more opportunities and many more markets out there for this type of product to be successful. You know, the bio-preferred status, what we haven't talked about yet, is something that will be a huge benefit to being able to actually go out and market and sell and gain contracts through the federal government. I mean, there are discussions with folks overseas in different countries around the world. India, I think, is one of them that always comes to mind. Those just weren't there with the Hoopa Modular. And again, I'm not going to sit here and defend what happened or try to address, you know, all of the history of that. The fact of the matter is that it's time to move on. This is an opportunity, I think, that we shouldn't pass up. I'm hopeful that we won't pass it up, and we're going to move forward.
Well, I was addressing the reality of the situation, and that the reality is that we did invest quite a lot of money into the modular plant, and for whatever reason, it didn't succeed. And so we have a vacant building there that's set up to build homes, but we're just not doing it. So that was an investment that was made by the Hoopa Valley Tribe. I mean, I'm one of them. You're both one of them.
Yeah.
And there's 3,000 others that are one of them, and generations yet to come. So that's why I felt that it was necessary to ask that question, is what was the forensics of why that failed? And okay, maybe you don't want to address it here in this session, but I think it is a legitimate question to be addressed.
Well,
so
that's
you can
fine.
Carry on.
I would just say, look, I don't know what you need more than what the reality is that it's not producing homes. I mean, if you want financials or a forensic sort of description of that facility to show you that it's been a tremendous disappointment and at a certain point failure, we can produce that, but I don't think you need to go that far. Look, the Hoopa tribe and our membership have had to pay for a number of years, nearly a decade, for the failures of that business and the idea behind it. And it's not something that has been very easy or something that folks have really been cheerful about. But the fact of the matter remains, you don't need to look very far to see that it's run its course. The only real lifeline now that's left for that facility is the infusion of tribal government dollars. It's essentially being subsidized by the tribal government through our housing program, when, in my opinion, those contracts and that money should flow out into the private sector. We have a number of contractors here that are tribal members that have businesses that should be able to capitalize on those types of projects. And that's not what's happening. And for me, that's, I'm more in favor. The tribal government has a tremendous amount of resources. It's the private sector that's really lacking here in this community, and continuing to go down that road in funneling, you know, government subsidies into a government-run facility isn't in our best interest, and it will not work for the long term. It will not work for the short term, and it hasn't worked in the past. So what we're doing today is and hopefully in the near future, is moving away from those types of ideas, moving away from government control, sort of government, too much government oversight, overregulation of certain things to the point of it not being allowed to be successful. We have successful businessmen in the room today whose record can speak for themselves. And again, this will be an opportunity to really sort of leave what has been an unfortunate reality in the past.